Castro is a highly regarded podcast app for iOS, one of those apps that has a devoted following precisely because of its thoughtful design and feature decisions. The founder wrote a post this week called "Building Relationships with Customers Through Support Didn't Turn Out as Hoped," which scored 166 points and 104 comments. The piece is a postmortem on a specific strategy, the idea that doing customer support personally and thoughtfully would build the kind of loyal customer relationships that would translate into revenue and retention.
The honest conclusion is that it largely didn't work the way hoped. The customers who sent detailed, thoughtful support requests and got personal responses from the founder did not convert to premium subscribers at meaningfully higher rates than customers who had impersonal support experiences. The human connection that felt like it should matter commercially turned out to be orthogonal to the purchase decision. What drove revenue was feature utility and competitive positioning, not relationship warmth.
The HN comments are split between people who found this dispiriting, the implication being that treating customers like humans doesn't pay off, and people who reframe it differently. The counterargument is that the value of customer relationships in a small app business isn't always direct conversion. It's product intelligence. The detailed support conversations are where you learn what's actually breaking, what users are trying to do that the interface doesn't support, what the gap is between your mental model of the product and the user's actual behavior.
The Castro postmortem also touches on something that's true for a lot of indie developers. The cognitive load of combining product development with customer support is enormous. Each one is a full-time job with different skill requirements and attention modes. Small teams often discover that doing both at the quality level either deserves requires trade-offs that eventually hurt both.
The economic story that generated genuine debate today is "When AI Costs More Than the Engineer" from Tom Tunguz, the venture capital analyst, scored 99 points and 91 comments. Tunguz is tracking the total cost of AI tooling for development teams, API costs, infrastructure, licensing, and projecting when that aggregate expenditure exceeds the fully loaded cost of the engineers who are being augmented or replaced. His estimate is that many teams will hit that crossover point around 2029.
The HN response to this was skeptical in interesting ways. Some engineers pushed back on the framing. The relevant comparison isn't AI cost versus engineer cost, it's AI cost versus output. If you're spending $100,000 a year on AI tooling and it doubles the throughput of a team that costs $1 million a year in salaries, the math strongly favors the tooling, even if the absolute AI cost looks large. The crossover calculation only matters if you're substituting AI for engineers rather than augmenting them.
Others pointed out that Tunguz's 2029 projection is already dated by the rate of model cost decline. API costs for frontier models have fallen roughly 80% in 18 months as model efficiency improves. If that trajectory continues, the cost concern might be self-resolving before it becomes a practical constraint for most teams.
The piece on the private capture of public genius, 119 points, 68 comments, makes a structural argument about how publicly funded research gets privatized. The author traces the path from federal grant funding to academic research to patent filing to venture-backed startup, arguing that the public bears the research risk while private actors capture the upside. The HN discussion is substantive. There are people defending the Bayh-Dole Act framework that enables university tech transfer, and people arguing that the current implementation has drifted far from the original intent.
This story connects directly to the broader AI moment. A significant fraction of the foundational research underlying current large language models, the attention mechanism, transformer architecture, key training techniques, came out of academic labs with substantial public funding. Whether the privatization of that downstream value represents appropriate commercialization or inappropriate extraction depends heavily on your priors about how innovation ecosystems should work.
Now, Marcus, this feels like the right moment for our "what if we're wrong" discussion, because there's one claim that's been implicit throughout today's episode that I think deserves genuine scrutiny. The near consensus on Hacker News today, and frankly in most tech circles, is that AI-assisted coding tools are net productivity gains for software developers. The Code Cleanliness Study, the GPT 5.6 in Codex announcement, the Tungus piece all sort of assume that as a baseline. But what if that assumption is wrong, or at least significantly overstated?
Walk me through the strongest version of the counterargument, because I've heard weak versions of this that I'm not persuaded by.
The strongest version isn't that AI coding tools don't help. The controlled studies show they do on narrow tasks. The strongest version is that the productivity gains are highly unevenly distributed and may actually be negative for a specific critical population, early career developers who are using these tools during the period when they would otherwise be building foundational skills through struggle and repetition. If a junior engineer offloads to an AI every problem that would have required them to deeply understand a concept, the short-term output looks good and the long-term skill development is stunted.
That's a genuinely concerning hypothesis. And it's not hypothetical. There are already engineering managers in the HN community describing this pattern. They're seeing junior developers who can produce working code with AI assistance, but can't explain what the code is doing or debug it when it fails in production.
For this counterargument to be right, you'd need several things to be true simultaneously. First, the skill development pathway that we think of as normal for engineers, struggling with problems, building intuition through failure, would have to be essential rather than just traditional. Maybe there's a different pathway to expertise that's AI-mediated that's equally valid. Second, the current generation of AI coding tools would have to actually be replacing that struggle rather than just accelerating the adjacent parts of the workflow. And third, companies would have to be failing to compensate for this with deliberate practice structures.
The thing I'd push back on is assumption three. Some companies are already building AI-aware onboarding programs, specifically designing problems for junior developers that require them to write code without AI assistance to build foundational fluency, then introducing AI tools into specific parts of the workflow later. That's an adaptive response that could preserve the benefit while mitigating the downside.
The signal I'd watch for if this counterargument is correct. We should start seeing increasing maintenance costs on code bases that were primarily built with heavy AI assistance, as the engineers who built them move on, and nobody who inherits the code has the deep understanding to maintain it confidently. If that pattern shows up in the next 2 to 3 years, it would be strong evidence that the skill atrophy concern is real and not being adequately addressed.
That's a concrete and falsifiable prediction, which is the right way to hold this kind of hypothesis. Worth watching.